And welcome back to Speak Up Las Cruces. So for the final half hour, we're going to be talking with local artist Adrian Aguirre, who has an exhibit opening up this weekend that I assume is going to be a disturbing exhibit because it's on a very disturbing topic. Can you talk a little bit about it?
Yeah, so this is an exhibit showing a few drawings that I've made this year, and it's the topic is it is very dark. It's been haunting me for the whole year, and it's an event that occurred in March where several migrants from Venezuela were taken to El Salvador to a high-security prison. And in that prison, they were tortured, and they were badly mistreated. This was all done without due process. So they were just taken there. They had not been convicted of crimes. And it was just... It was horrible.
It was.
It was horrible.
I know exactly what you're talking about, and I was impacted exactly the same way. The vision of those men being, you know, frog marched in a squatting position. And understanding what lied ahead. I mean, So I completely understand where you're coming from.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember like when it first happened. I'm an immigrant myself, and so. Part of me was like, I need to leave this country. This is where it's headed, you know? And
if this is who we are.
Yeah. And, but you know, I started thinking about, what it means to be a citizen, you know, and what I went through that ceremony and I made an oath, you know, and part of that oath is that we have a responsibility, and so for me, it's important for me to speak up about this issue because I love this country and I want to make sure that we maintain our commitment to civil rights, commitment to human rights, as was written by our founders. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what will people see at your exhibit? And will there be any kind of discussion, or what will happen at the event?
The plan is basically just to show the art and to raise awareness about this issue. One of the things that happened recently was at CBS. I don't know if you heard. CBS pulled a segment interviewing some of these prisoners and what took place and some of the what I think is a crime against humanity.
Yes.
And so I think it's important for people to hear about this. I don't have any plans for a talk.
Okay.
The plan is just here's the art, and hopefully
the art speaks for itself. I wanted to say a word about this as somebody who's been a journalist all my life. The decision that Barry Weiss made at CBS is indefensible. She gave two primary reasons for it. One was she said that they didn't have a statement from the administration. Well, okay, if that's the standard moving forward, then you never get to write a critical story or publish a critical story about the administration again. All they have to do is not comment, and they get veto power. So obviously, that's a weak, horrible, inexcusable excuse. Her second excuse was that it didn't advance the story, that everything that was in their story had been reported earlier by the Washington Post or the New York Times, I forget which one, which may be true. But as a journalist, you understand that there is a huge difference between print and visual. The most eloquent writer in the world could not write a print story that would make me feel the same way that I felt watching the video of those men being treated the way they were treated. So both of her excuses are indefensible. If this is the future of what is the most regaled, the most the standard for television journalism, CBS, or not CBS, 60 Minutes on CBS, has over the years built a reputation as the standard. I mean, it doesn't get any. And if this is what happens at the flagship, at the best that we've got, where they're afraid, they're too cowardly to report the news, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, that's. I mean, it was very controversial, and there was a lot of people that criticized it exactly for that reason. But I mean, if you know Barry Weiss from her start of the career, and who now the owner Larry Ellison is, then it comes to no surprise that that's what their agenda is.
Yeah. No, that's exactly right. Yeah. So, tell me a little bit more about, is this a cathartic? How do you feel as you're going through this process and now as you're displaying this to the world?
Yeah, I think there is a bit of catharsis, a bit of therapy, because like I said, I think for me it was huge emotional impact. I just thought about these men who were taken there, and at least at that point, there was not an idea when they would get out. You know, mm-hmm. I think in one of the interviews in the aftermath, that he said that the director, when they were first brought into the facility, said, "Welcome to hell. Mm-hmm. This is where people come in alive and they leave dead," in Spanish. That's what I was in my head. It was like, you know, when are these men going to get out? There's no conviction. There's no sentence, and they're just there in this like. I invite the listeners to see some of the images from this prison, which is one of the worst places I think you could imagine. Yeah, exactly. And they in many of the interviews, if you with the people have gone to speak to the people that manage this prison, mm-hmm. is that they boast on how horrific the conditions are. that's what they're proud of. I think for me it was a bit of a therapy, because I was like, well, I'm feeling horrible. I feel like there's something I should be doing about mm-hmm. this issue. I'm not sure what it is. And I just started making drawings mm-hmm. about it. These are not artworks that I would imagine anybody would want to display on their wall, or you know, it's not a pretty picture, right? I had no intention of selling this work. I just wanted to raise awareness. And in the studio, I felt like I was doing something. Oftentimes we feel so powerless because we're just one person in this world, and we don't have any power or what our state does. And so being in the studio gave me that catharsis, gave me that feeling like I was doing something and in a way helping hopefully to make sure that this doesn't happen again. Although we're not there yet. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, very far from that, right? Yeah, because I think El Salvador was just one country, or that situation.
Yes.
Yeah, but mm-hmm. other immigrants were, you know, mm-hmm. sort of taken, and then what was Panama and like other countries, like, oh, you know, the president sort of boasted on like, oh yeah, these other countries are willing to take these folks that are sort of stateless.
South Sudan. Yes. The worst countries in the world.
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. So I'm curious if you have any, desire or plan to continue this type of artwork, or is your artwork centered around any sort of other issues, you know, during times?
So I think I've been focused on border politics for a very long time. It started when I was in grad school. I did a series on day laborers in Texas. Mm-hmm. And then I just, this is something that's very personal, a topic that's very personal to me, and one that I've seen, at least in this country, has gotten worse. I started in the mid-2000s, and at that point, the anti-immigrant sentiment started to get worse, and it's only gotten, you know, I've never imagined it would get this far. I think it's, you know, decades of anti-immigrant propaganda has just twisted people's minds, and to the point where they have no remorse or no empathy for the people that come here. They think that they're criminals, or that they deserve this punishment. And I think that we need, all of us need to find a way to combat that and tell the true stories. One of the things that was that has been very important to me is to speak to immigrants, to refugees. I've spoken to refugees in Mexico who were caught, you know, in the Remain in Mexico policy. Mm-hmm. They had to stay in camps. And so I spoke to them. They're not criminals. They're just desperate people trying to survive. I spoke to Venezuelan immigrants in El Paso who were in traveling to their destination. And they were just camping out in downtown waiting to, for the bus. And they were just, they're young people. There was a young girl hugging a large plush toy. There was a young couple. These are the, like I said, these aren't criminals. They're just like any of us. If we were in their situation, we might be in the same position. So, yeah.
I think you make such a good point because it took me a while to wrap my head around the fact that the cruelty was a feature, not a glitch. The
yes.
cruelty was absolutely intentional. The cruelty is something that they revel in, that they celebrate. And look at Christy Noem. She gets all dolled up for glamour shots,
yeah.
posing in front of half-naked men
mm-hmm.
in a clear violation of the Geneva Convention. But not only that, who takes pleasure? Who?
Yeah.
Who would want to have their image? I don't know. There is a mentality about that that I just don't understand, other than clearly there has been so much scapegoating ever since NAFTA, to be honest. That
yes.
Every white man who lost his job can find somebody black or brown to blame that on. It's never his fault. It's you know, and I'm getting into stereotypes myself, but you know, we all know the drunken guy at the end of the bar
mm-hmm.
who lost his job because he was drunk and didn't show up. But no, because it's a minority took my job, and that's why I'm unemployed. And so we have seen 30 or 40 years of that narrative coming home to roost. I think right now in mm-hmm. just an ugly part of our history. I think there's no question that 20, 30 years from now, we're going to look back on this the same way we look back on Japanese internment. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what it feels like to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope you're right. I think if you look at, the media that has pushed this, you know, they're very well funded. And so you have to wonder why, the wealthy are pushing this agenda, right? Mm-hmm. And it probably has something to do with the fact that it lets them off the hook, you know. So, in a way, if you have people blaming immigrants instead of the people that are actually in power, then it benefits them. And so, I think that there's a lot to that. There's Rupert Murdoch with Fox News and the people that funded Breitbart, all these very conservative media outlets are very well funded, and for a reason.
Can you talk a little bit about your own experience? How old were you when you first came here, and how was the process of becoming an American for you?
So I was born in Juarez, and I went to school there up until I was in sixth grade. My youngest brother had been born with cerebral palsy, and so he's handicapped. And when when it was time for him to go to school, my mother searched everywhere in Juarez for a school for him. It's a school that would take him and actually educate him, not just like a babysitter.
Yeah.
And so the only option was to go to El Paso. Then she took myself and my other brother to El Paso, and we started going to school there at a private school. We had to get visas, student visas, and that was a process in itself. It's not an immigration visa, right? It's just a visitor visa, student visa, but you still have to prove a lot of things that most people in Mexico can't. And one of them is you have to have, you know, your parents have to have some sort of wealth. Like you had to demonstrate that you had high amounts of money in your bank account. And I was fortunate enough that my parents and, you know, I had an aunt that had some money that could give my father some money so that he could prove that. I started to go to school in 7th grade, 8th grade, and in high school, graduated from in El Paso, came to school here at New Mexico State University. I actually followed my father, who came here to do his PhD. So I came here with him, and we almost ended up graduating together.
Okay.
Yeah, so my father, my mother, and myself almost graduated in the same year, except I slacked off a little bit, and I graduated a semester afterward. I fell in love, and I got married, and I became a citizen. I have kids, this is my home. So,
yeah. And how did you get into art?
I don't know. I think it's right. From a kid, I was just drawing all the time, and you know, I was that weird kid that had always doodling in class.
Right.
You know,
so, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I just I had different interests, but the one thing that kept calling me back was art. Mm-hmm. And so I got a degree in graphic design at first, and then I did a master's in painting.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so you mentioned you've always done some mm-hmm. artwork around border issues mm-hmm. and immigration. So what else can you just, you know, give us some other pieces of art that you've...
So I mentioned that I did a series on day laborers in Denton. I've done some work with the refugees they were stuck in Mexico. So I did a whole series of portraits of scenes from the refugee camp. One of them I remember was a little makeshift soccer field that was in the camp. And it was in the middle of a bunch of tents, you know, and that one is one of the images I most remember. I remember meeting a lot of young people there, and then I did their portraits. I've done a series of Border Patrol after that event in Texas where they were on horseback and chased mm-hmm. the Haitian immigrants. That's a few of the things I've done. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how do you feel like your art, is it just for you? I mean, you talked about the catharsis, but I mm-hmm. assume that you're putting something out into the world and you're trying to make a statement.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I want to make a statement. I think hard about what I want to say. And one of the things that's important to me is to... draw attention to reality. Mm-hmm. And so I do source a lot of my images from photojournalism because of that, because I'm not trying to stage something. You know, this is something myself as an artist is I want to sort of document the reality that's there.
I was just going to say that the way you're describing it, Tim, just thinking them. You know, if to see any of your artwork, thinking about like the humanity, right, mm-hmm. of it all, like, and how inhumane also, right?
Yes, yeah, yes.
All of this, mm-hmm. all these actions and treatment of our fellow human beings, the government agencies essentially, right, are mm-hmm. being required to and engage in. So,
yeah.
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 Thank you for having that voice.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is important. Do you ever do happy stuff? Do you ever draw flowers and clouds?
Yes. I do try to manage, like, do a balance. Cause if you step too much into darkness.
Cause it's very heavy.
Yeah. I did find some happy scenes in the refugee camp. A lot of smiles, a lot of hopeful people. Right. And so I think for me that was a happy moment, even in those circumstances. I also, you know, personally, I love art, and so I do a lot of art with my kids. I painted my kids, and you know, obviously, that's gives me a lot of happiness.
So. Of course, of course.
Yeah.
So where do you want to go? Do you want to just keep? Do you have a place where your art is shown frequently, or if people wanted to see more or to learn more about you, where would they go?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram. You can find me Adrian Aguirre Art at Instagram. AdrianAguirre.com is my portfolio, so you can find me there. I've been showing in New Mexico. I don't have like one place that I'm showing, but I've shown in Santa Fe. I've shown here in Las Cruces. I am going to be a part of a show here at the museum. It's a group show at the Las Cruces Museum. And then it hasn't been announced yet, but I am going to show in Houston later on in the year.
Yeah. And all of these same paintings?
Similar topics,
And tell us once again about the event that you've got coming up this weekend. When and where that's going to be?
It's the place. It's called Casa Otro, and it's right across Josefina's. If anybody has ever eaten or had coffee at Josefina's, it's right across the street from it. It's right behind the church in Mesilla. I don't know the exact address, Calle de Guadalupe, something. It's this Saturday, 4 to 6 p.m. Yeah,
and what can people expect?
People will expect to have have images that make them think about what happened, and hopefully motivates them to do something about it. I think I'm wearing a shirt that says. Únete pueblo, like pueblo unite, right? Yeah, so the idea, I think, is that we as people can't wait for our elected officials to do what we need. You know, sometimes we have to take action. I think that there's a lot, we are all very busy. And so part of us who feel strongly about this issue may feel like, well, we'll just have to wait till the next election.
Mm. Yeah.
But the way things are going, I don't think we can wait. Yeah.
Well, it certainly can get incredibly discouraging and feel like, you know, it's all out of your hands. But I'll tell you what, seeing people all throughout this country respond to these ICE raids the way that they have with, you know, their cell phone in hand and just a peaceful, nonviolent resistance and putting the images out there for the world to see.
Yes.
I think that part of it has been encouraging.
Yes. Yeah, it has been very encouraging to me because I think apathy is what they want from us.
Yeah.
Right? If we're all despondent and despair and feeling like there's no hope, there's nothing that we can do, that's exactly what they want.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Mm-hmm. So once again, you're 4 to 6, is that what you said this Saturday?
Yeah, 4 to 6, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, anything else before we... Yeah, Daisy?
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, so you said paintings, right? I just want to make sure, drawing, painting...
Drawings mostly, yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I know, because you said you got
master's in painting.
Fine arts. Yeah,
yeah,
in painting.
Yeah, and in art school, like, painting and drawing are almost treated the same. So it's like...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so you do drawing and painting.
Well, that's true, right, you can paint again. Yeah.
It's, so it's basically like 2D, like 2D art, you know, so, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah. Well, and we probably should have said the final thing on that 60 Minutes clip. In the internet age, it is hard to put a lid on anything. And so a version of the show accidentally got sent to a TV station in Canada.
Yeah.
And it is now up on YouTube. And anybody who wants to watch that episode, it is available to go see it. And I would encourage people to, because it's a very well done piece. And watching it will make you wonder why they pulled it, I think. But
I think it's very important for people to see these images and make sure that they, like I said, that these things don't happen again. You can find it anywhere in the internet. It got sent to Canada. I have a brother in Canada, and he was like, oh, I saw it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. So,
yeah.
And like I said, it is a very typical 60-minute piece. There is mm-hmm. nothing out of the ordinary. There's nothing that's, oh, okay, I see why they had to pull that. I mean, it's just very standard reporting that they have made their reputation doing for years. And, mm-hmm. you know, Sharon Alfonsi is a very fine reporter. And,
yes.
I think that's a good thing that anybody who wants to see that clip can have access to it.
Mm-hmm.